Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 265, recorded September 20th, 2011. Mahickamadoodle Beta. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Today's mobile world makes easy-to-use collaboration software more than nice to have. It's a necessity. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, Gazelle it. Gazelle your used gadgets today at Gazelle.com. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain or trade in your old clunkers. Visit MacBreak.Hover.com. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers the latest from Cupertino and the Macintosh and iOS world. And with us, as always, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth in his brand new home.
Yes, I've decided to ditch the country life and move to the big city. I should be dead by Wednesday.
Where are you? Wait a minute! Don't tell me. It looks like a W.
No, actually, it's one of those hotels that someone books you in, and you're like, I don't recognize that brand name. Okay, this could go either way, but it turns out to be a very, very lovely hotel in Midtown Manhattan with several stars. It's actually, I can't show you around, but it is actually a suite.
It looks quite nice.
Yes, I don't dare even look at the bucket of Pringles and other snacks because
$18 can of chips and you're going to be sorry. So, what brings you to the Big Apple?
I'm giving a keynote at a conference at the Sloan Kettering Institute tomorrow.
Wow, prestigious!
I'm going to teach them all about healthcare. No, maybe I'll just go with the tech side of things. Maybe.
Alex Lindsay's tied up in San Francisco with other matters, but we have a very good replacement for him. A fellow who's been here before, Arnold Kim of MacRumors.com via his iPhone. Hi, Arnold. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing well.
You're telling me that the guy in charge at MacRumors doesn't have a MacBook with a camera in it?
I do. It's not here. And my main computer is a Mac Pro with a 30-inch display, so it doesn't have a camera built in.
Oh, okay.
So that's my excuse. But
you know, those new 27 inches have a very nice eyesight, HD.
They do. They do. I guess I should upgrade.
You like the big screen, though. I understand. I had a 30 for a long time, and I miss it. Arnold's editorial director at Mac Rumors. And you could actually be speaking to Sloan Kettering, because weren't you a physician by trade?
Yes, I was a nephrologist, kidney doctor, until I quit.
You don't do that anymore?
Nope.
Because I got this terrible pain right down here in my... No, I won't ask you.
No longer. I think my medical knowledge has declined precipitously over the last 2 years.
Arnold, don't knock it. You know, kidneys really haven't changed much in the last million years. I think you're probably fine. I think you're good.
That's right. I could just pick it back up.
It's an interesting shift to say, I'm going to go from being a physician to I'm going to run a Mac rumor site, a great Mac. I mean, the Mac rumor site.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, there was a slow transition over the years. It wasn't, I didn't quit and then started up.
Came out of a love, I'm sure, for Apple and the Macintoshes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, certainly personal interest. It's fueled it all. So.
Did Apple ever give you a hard time about the word Mac in there?
Surprisingly, they didn't. They've been pretty hardcore about the iPod and iPhone domains that people have been using, but I think the Mac ones have been around too long. They might be
it's kind of generic by now. 27 years later, it's kind of
They might be too late on that. Actually,
Go because I want to rename this show to Mac Twit. Actually, it is Mac Break. I've never heard anything from Apple, so I guess we're all right. It's good we didn't call it iOS Break.
Right, iPod Break, you'd have a problem.
We actually have iPad today. We haven't said anything about that show yet, but maybe can you edit that out?
I don't.
Bleep. So, top story, kind of an interesting story, straight ripped from the headlines. Apple is at I don't know how much stock price has to do with anything, but it is at an all-time stock price high. It closed yesterday, $411. But this is the thing I find interesting. Up 10% since Jobs stepped down. Is that counterintuitive?
I wouldn't say so. I think I can never be shocked by what happens in the stock market, because they're not really they're based on reality, but they're mostly based on gambling and fear. But really, the only thing that they will trade based on speculation. But once actual real numbers come by, everybody wises up pretty fast. Also, I mean, a whole bunch of different competitors and lined up competitors to Apple have been flaming out left and right. And I think this is a bunch of excitement going on about a new product release and people wanting to buy in early before other people get in after the iPhone 4S or 5 comes out and gets more attention for Apple, and iCloud comes out getting even more attention for Apple. So I think this is kind of a self-feeding cycle.
I take it back now. It's up another 2% today. It's now, it was at just at 420. It's now 419.66. Still an all-time record high. In fact, if you look at the graph, a big discontinuity starting starting this week. It's just jumped on Monday. And then jumped again on Tuesday. Let me look at the one-month trend to see. Yeah, it's been just climbing like crazy. You know, the old adage in the stock market is you buy on the rumor, you sell on the news. I guess, Arnold, everybody, you know, the price already included Steve Jobs leaving. That wasn't such a surprise.
Right. Well, yeah, it wasn't a surprise. It was probably a shock at the time, but everyone knew it was coming. So right. I think from that standpoint, it was priced into the stock. Otherwise, you know, it's hard to find fault with Apple. They've been doing so well with the iPhone 4. And there's every day there's like a new report. iPhone 4 is like the best-selling, you know, smartphone and that sort of thing. So that said, I don't know how much leeway Apple will get if they have any mess ups in the future, because I feel like everyone's going to, Jobs not being there is going to be the go-to excuse or go-to blame. If that makes sense.
Well, and then if it is true, if the adage is true, you buy on the rumor, sell on the news. When they do announce the iPhone, next iPhone in the next few weeks, maybe you'll have a little sell-off. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's ramping up now as the rumors are ramping up about the iPhone 5. Now, I've been reading Mac rumors religiously over the last few days. This must be the heyday. This is like your you know election year or something.
Right.
You know, as the days build up to an Apple announcement. First, let me ask you, any date? Do we know?
I think everyone's looking at the first week of October, so 5th, 6th, 7th sort of dates.
Good, because I'm planning a vacation for the 10th. And we were trying to decide. It's so funny. We were trying to decide, should I stay or should I go? And I said, oh, screw it. I'm not going to wait to figure out what Apple's going to do.
Right.
So maybe I did the right thing.
Pretty soon. I mean, everyone's kind of on edge. Yeah. And, you know, from what we've heard, it does seem like first week of October is probably, if it hasn't been announced by then, it'll be announced then. And if that's the case, we should hopefully see invites in the next week or so.
And the 23rd is, we hear, the day. That's 3 days from now, the end of this week, the day that the Gold Master for iOS 5 will be out, right?
That's what everyone's saying. And it seems very likely. Apple is going to reset iCloud data on the 22nd.
Perfect.
And then I'm certain that the 23rd was planned for GM. Whether it happens, you know, things can always change, I guess. But that's where we expect it to come. I mean, the GM probably see it to developers. The actual consumer release will probably be alongside the announcement.
TMO News, and you have this story on Mac Rumors too. It has a screenshot of a newsletter sent to T-Mobile staff saying, quote, we are not going to get the iPhone 5 this year. However, rumors are strong that Sprint will get an iPhone in October. So T-Mobile will be the one left out.
Right. That's what it seems like. I mean, the Sprint rumor had been floating around, but I think the Wall Street Journal is who finally said, yes, it's going to happen for Sprint this year.
Wall Street Journal obviously has a pipeline, right? They've got a direct line to the chief of marketing at Apple, and they just pick it up. Yeah, and they say, okay, what's the because if it, once it's in the journal, it's like, okay, it's going to happen, right? Have they missed any of these?
You know, nothing big. I feel like they are the ones that tend to get like these sort of last minute scoops that sort of help.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can kind of argue that Apple sort of pushing the rumors in that direction to
It's the cotton line. It's the Katie Cotton hotline. Delete, 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 delete. Katie Cotton.
Yes, you're right, Walt. We will be releasing it on Sprint. I just feel like that there is a little. It must irk you a little bit, Arnold, because I mean, you've got
I don't mind it at all. It gives us, you know, something to talk about.
That's true. That's true. So what do we know now, or what do we? We don't know anything, but what do we think now about? So first week of October. For a while, I was hearing two phones. Then I was hearing one phone. Now it seems as if the drumbeat is two phones, a low-cost, basically rehash of the iPhone, a 4S, that's for international markets primarily, although will be available here. Maybe that's what T-Mobile will get. I don't know. And then an actual iPhone 5. Is that what you think, Arnold? Is that what you're hearing? Then I'll ask you, Andy. I don't want to leave you out.
Yeah, it's been very confusing this time around. I think there's the iPhone 4S, which is what everyone's calling it, there've been.
That's the cheap one.
Well, maybe. I mean, there's been we've actually seen parts for it. So the screen, the frame, and even like various components to the device seem to have been leaking into the supply chain. So if you put all those together, it just looks like an iPhone 4 and may support, maybe a world phone, may support CDMA and GSM, which includes AT&T and Verizon. The weird part about it is it seems to have an A5 processor as well. So if you're going to call that the low-cost iPhone, it's hard to say. So I mean, backing up a step, if you look at the most ambitious view of how these rumors will fall out, and let's assume just that everything is true, then there's going to be this iPhone 5, which is actually a bigger device than the current iPhone 4. There'll be this iPhone 4S, which is what people are calling it, and that will be a world phone and also have an A5 processor, which is the faster processor that is in the iPad 2 right now. And then there's this debate about whether or not that's going to be the cheap one. In some ways, it's possible that the existing iPhone 4 will become the cheap one, just like the iPhone 3GS was the cheap one before.
Right.
But that's a real ambitious view where, like, it's like you take everything and say everything's going to be true. Then that's sort of how it's going to fall out. It's like iPhone 4 might be the very cheap one. iPhone 4S will be a faster but still retain the iPhone 4 form factor. And then the 5 will be this bigger phone and also be faster, just like the iPad 2. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but that's sort of like, those are all the rumors swirled together into like one bowl and be like, well, that's where right. Everything falls. There's a few questions.
Outliers.
There's always been a few questions about that.
Yeah. Here's the from the Chinese Twitter site, Weibo.com. Here's a picture of parts, including that A5 chip and a battery that's slightly higher power, 4.7 volts. And that would be 5. We don't know. JP Morgan's now saying there's the iPhone, what do they say? iPhone 4 plus and the iPhone 5. What, Andy, what do you think?
It's still really $5 will get you any bet on any odds between what's going to happen. All I can say is that I'm still leaning towards one iPhone and it being an iPhone 4S sort of thing, like a component upgrade. Maybe a redesign of the body, but nothing shockingly new or shockingly big. I've seen lots of the sort of information you would tend to see that would support the iPhone 4S sort of thing. I haven't yet seen the sort of information that would indicate that an iPhone 5 is coming. But remember that comes down to the idea of, do I know what anybody is talking about when anybody's talking about an iPhone 5? So my money's still on one iPhone, and it's not going to be big song and dance iPhone 5. I believe it's going to be an incremental upgrade to the iPhone 4.
These images are from Panda X Tech. Now, this one's a 3.7 volt, 5.3 watt hour battery, slightly, 1430 milliamp hours of charge, which is 10 milliamp hours bigger than the iPhone 4. You do see the A5, though, clearly in there. This is funny because even though it's disassembled, you see that it's asking to be hooked up to iTunes.
And that's interesting. There was something that I'm glad someone else raised this in the comments, because I'm thinking that, well, again, according to published reports I've read on Apple Insider, Mac Rumors, and
they're
other
not going to do that anymore.
Available sites. Yeah. Exactly. The iOS 5, you don't even have to do anything to it when you take it out of the box. So I don't know. That doesn't necessarily mean that if this were a real like engineering sample, that obviously they would put iOS 5 on it. Well, maybe they would just put iOS 4 just to test it out, and that's simply what they're testing it with. But that's kind of an interesting data point. But again, it's just another excuse for to talk and wonder.
I swear it's just endless.
for weeks and weeks and weeks, it's always just time and time again saying, and why, what, it was a sunny day in Dallas that day, but that guy standing had an umbrella and he opened it just before the motorcade passed by.
Why
And it turns out just to be, well, maybe
he just opened his umbrella. Sometimes an umbrella is just an umbrella.
So yeah, like Andy said, there hasn't been a lot of evidence about the actual 5. The only thing, the 5 that everyone's talking about, all that came from these case designs that were leaked early on, and that the Chinese manufacturers are ramping up these iPhone 5 cases. But besides that, there's been no leaked parts about that new case.
It's a new case design. It's beginning a little bit funny. I got a picture from somebody who said, this looks like it could be the new iPhone 5. What do you think? And I look at it, and I thought it was a joke, so I didn't reply. And I'm waiting for you. What do you think? This is really it? Because I think it's like spot on. And then I had to like say very tactfully, saying, well, I'm a little bit skeptical that Apple would put a Nikon F mount interchangeable lens on the corner of it. Even if the iPhone is not this big, let's say that it's scaled down, I don't think they're going to have an interchangeable lens system attached, because it was literally, someone had pasted in like the distinctive like ring mount of like an SLR lens and what looked like a 50mm like f1.8. So I'm like,
that's funny.
I gotta say no. I could be wrong. Hey, Apple surprised me before, but
now
I gotta say no.
Here's an interesting data point. AT&T launched LTE in San Antonio, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, on Sunday. But I think we've all been pretty consistently presuming that there will not be a 4G iPhone this time around. But don't you think it's interesting? Somebody said, well, that confirms what I thought, which is that Apple deferred the iPhone 5 until LTE was available so it could ship an LTE-based iPhone.
Well, remember that we're all Apple people, so we tend to think that the only phone that anybody is interested in selling is the iPhone. There are these things called Android phones,
and they
work great. I've been carrying around a couple of different Android 4G phones and having a lot of fun with them. I think that it's, at some point, AT&T has to start rolling out their 4G network, and this is just the first step in that network. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be in Chicago for a second conference later this week. And I'm meeting up with AT&T while I'm there, and they're going to give me some hardware. And before I huddle back to my little Puritan fishing colony where we don't deserve AT&T 4G, I'm hoping to get some speed tests and stuff done.
This, just so people understand what we're talking about, AT&T has been up to now using something called HSPA Plus, which is really, I don't think it qualifies as 4G. I don't think anybody in the U.S. is actually doing anything that would be truly 4G. LTE is what Verizon, it stands for long-term evolutions, what Verizon's using for their 4G. AT&T will be going 4G with LTE. Everybody will be LTE eventually. But right now, if you look at the map, it's 4 dots. It's 3% of the U.S.
Yeah.
That's where you can get it.
And on top of everything else, Verizon right now is to 4G what Apple is to the tablet market. If you really want 4G speed, you really have to go with Verizon, because they have the largest network. In my experience of 4, 5, 6 different cities with like usually like a Verizon phone and some other maker's phone side by side, not only does Verizon always have better coverage, but the speed increase available on Verizon is not subtle in the least.
Yeah.
It's the difference between, hey, wow, that's faster than 3G, and just, hey, wow, which is pretty much what Verizon will give you. But I do agree with you that I think that if there's a good, amongst the good reasons for Apple not 4G in an immediate phone is that this is the thing that will make difference between an iPhone 4 and an iPhone 5, the thing that will take people, not just people to their have an iPhone 4. And I think that's one of the signal things they're going to be using for the iPhone 5 designation.
We've seen people on Google Plus and elsewhere and other social networks saying that AT&T has suddenly started offering them this and that. Somebody said the AT&T offered to convert me back to unlimited data. And guessing that maybe this was AT&T worried that people would pick up the new iPhone at Verizon, hoping to get a better data network. But I think we all agree that. Let's ask Arnold, because you're the only one we haven't talked to. But over the last few weeks, I think we've all agreed that it seems unlikely that Apple would do a 4G iPhone this month, next month.
Right. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think all the signs have been. All the analysts, all the predictions have been that LTE is too soon for this launch. So
Right. There's
also someone pinpointed the exact like Qualcomm chipset that they expect Apple to use, which I guess has a lower power profile than the current ones. And that's not due until the first half of 2012. So if you believe that, then
that would make sense. Go with that chip.
And Apple said during a conference call that there were compromises they were unwilling to make with the LTE chipsets, which everyone interpreted as power consumption.
Well, I think the most important data point is that Instagram 2.0 came out today. And clearly, that means the new iPhone will be here any minute now.
Yeah, you ever think that so in Apple, like there are this team of engineers who just weeps every time an app like Instagram becomes like a popular thing? They say, we spent so much of our time. I missed my baby's first steps because we were engineering the best camera phone ever. And you want to just use this cheap app that makes it look like a 1973 Polaroid? Well, screw you, Instagram.
I never thought of it quite that way, but you're right. I have to say, though, that Instagram is – I would bet. I think I saw stats, but I don't remember. But I would bet Instagram is like the number one way iPhone pictures are shared these days. Huge number of people use Instagram. Now they're going to go to a higher resolution, which is good. Still won't be 8 megapixels if there is indeed an 8 megapixel camera in the next iPhone. Anyway. I hope I didn't steal anybody's pick of the week with that one. We've got Arnold Kim here from Mac Rumors, macrumors.com. Andy Inako is here. He's in a hotel in New York City, and his Skype has been working so great until just a second ago. So, Andy, we're going to hang up on you and call you right back while I do a go-to-meeting commercial. How about that? How about that? What about them apples?
I'm only sorry I'm going to miss the commercial.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too. But you're not going to miss the commercial. GoToMeeting, it is absolutely the best way to do meetings online. We do so many meetings now. Meetings are the bane of any business existence, right? And, you know, unfortunately, it's about the only way you can get teams working together. It's how you make sales. It's how you train people. You got to have face-to-face meetings. But nowadays, with teams spread out all over the country, all over the world, sometimes those face-to-face meetings happen on the phone, on conference calls. Ick. That's why we've used GoToMeeting for so long, because GoToMeeting at least allows you to add, sharing, screen sharing, so you can see, the PowerPoint or the keynote presentation. Well, now they've added HD faces, and I have to say, this makes GoToMeeting the way to meet. Even if I'm going to have a meeting with staff in the same town, I'm going to say, let's use GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting has added high-definition video to their screen sharing. It's incredible. You can have up to 6 people in the meeting, see their video. Everybody these days has a webcam, except for Arnold. Everybody has a webcam these days, so it's really, and I'll tell you, if, with the kind of bandwidth that you have nowadays in most places, you're really getting high def, crystal clear video. The audio is built in, so it's a conference call over VoIP these days. You still have the screen sharing. It is just a spectacular way to streamline communication, to improve productivity. You can schedule meetings in advance. That's what we usually do. We send out an email. Makes it very easy for everybody. But you can also do it on the fly. By the way, your attendees do not have to have it installed. It's a click, and 30 seconds later, it's running on their system. I love that. No IT support necessary. You don't need to have a – it uses NAT traversal, so you don't need to punch holes in firewalls or in anything like that. It really is very, very slick. Try GoToMeeting right now free for 30 days. Just go to the website, gotomeeting.com. And now it looks like, try it free button and then use the offer code MACBREAK. GoToMeeting.com. This is 30 days free. GoToMeeting.com. try it free button, MacBreak. Get everybody in your company or everybody you meet with to try this. Show them the video. I think they'll be blown away. I could not believe how good it was. It really, it's incredible. Go. We should actually do the shows this way. Go to meeting.com. Use the offer code MacBreak. I think you will love it. Andy Iannacco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. If you stopped wasting your bandwidth, maybe your Skype would work. We called him back. He sounds good.
Am I? Thank you.
I think we'll just call you back every 10 minutes.
Fine by me.
American Customer Service Satisfaction Index. If you can, imagine what that measures. It measures satisfaction. Apple number one, once again, in satisfaction. A poll of 70,000 consumers. Apple kind of clobbered everybody else. There's Apple with 87% customer satisfaction. That's kind of stunning. Hewlett Packard was 78. Baseline, whatever that is 78. Acer is 77. And they rolled Lenovo, Sony, and Toshiba into all others. I don't know why. Dell down there at 77. So, but here's another. This is actually this is from Harry McCracken's Technologizer blog. This I like. This red line is Apple. Look at the customer satisfaction. Dove a little bit in 97, 98. Steve Jobs comes back, starts climbing, and they you know, if this were a horse race, they'd have run away with it. Look at that. Just stunning. So not a surprise. I think everybody. You know, in preparation for the iPhone 5, I took my daughter's broken iPhone 3GS, which I had in a drawer, and my son's broken and dipped in a swimming pool iPhone 4, which I had in a drawer, and I brought it into this company that does iPhone repair up the road a bit. We've actually had them in. They took apart the iPad when it came out. It's amazing. Half an hour, they go, bzz, bzz, bzz. They got all the parts, bzz, blow dry, bzz, scraped out the corrosion, bzz, bzz, and the whole thing's back together and working for like $100 each. Then somebody told me that Apple, and I would like to get the confirmation of this, Apple, if you bring in a broken iPhone, will just give you a new one for $200, no questions asked. Is that true?
I think that's true.
Really?
Sometimes
they don't charge you the full $600?
And as a matter of fact, I also advise people that if you have had an accident with your iPhone or any of your mobile devices, it is worthwhile. And you know it's totally your fault. You put it through the wash, or you dropped it down some stairs, or whatever. It's totally worth it to go to the Genius Bar, tell them what happened, and see if they can do anything.
And
for
be
you.
Honest.
Yeah, absolutely be honest, because they can figure, they can find, they see millions and millions of these phones. They know that a phone with a cracked screen on both sides and lots of scrapes on the edges did not just stop working. But there is, I spent a long time talking to Genius Bar people to find out what a lot of their policies were. And time again, I came across this phrase called the "we're awesome" policy. Which is, sometimes if you feel as though this guy tried to take care of his phone, he just got unlucky, we happen to be doing kind of okay with spares on hand, so just to prove how awesome we are, we're going to explain, and this person was honest with us, just to show how awesome we are, we're just going to swap them out a new phone. That's not something you can count on, because they will explain to you that this is not within warranty, we have no obligation to do this, we're just saying, you know what, I think you just got unlucky, and we want to make sure that you're happy with your purchase, so congratulations, we will swap you out a new one. That's especially true in the first couple of weeks after a new iPad or a new iPhone has been released.
Yeah. The chat room's confirming that this is the case, that and it is a refurb, not a new, but it's as good as new. I mean, it's a refurb iPhone. Right. And will they just do that again and again and again for $200? I know occasionally you get it for free. That's pretty amazing.
I don't know if there's a limit to that. But the other thing is, if you crack the back of your iPhone, like the back glass, they'll replace that for $29.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I had to get that done.
Well, it's easy because the thing is glass and it's slippery.
Yeah.
So it does. It's kind of a bad guy. And I try to get my. Ooh, what happened there? Looks like you dipped it in tar.
Well, that's gaffer's tape to basically hold the glass back together. I got that was one of the classics. It's in my shirt pocket. I got home from a job or something, had to like bend down to pick up a package, and boom, down into the concrete it went. So this is just wow. like negative reinforcement to remind myself to be more careful with my toys.
So here's a picture of the broken phones. The one on the left is the iPhone 4. It's broken on the back as well, and took a dip in the swimming pool. And by the way, the folks at iPhone Urgent Care, as soon as he opened, he said, "Oh, you got it wet too." I said, "What?" He said, "Let's see this strip here. It turns blue when it's wet." So that's why Apple knows. And then it was kind of impressive. They replaced both front and back. I had to get them to replace some other stuff, and they fixed it. So I was very pleased. But little did I know I could get a completely new one, practically new one, for $200. So good on Apple. No wonder they've got such high customer satisfaction. That's the kind of thing that makes a big difference, and the kind of thing that nobody else, I don't think, is doing.
Yeah, and I think the thing that kind of leaps out at you with all the companies on that list is that Apple is the only company that not only does their own service, but does it face-to-face.
Right.
They don't just send you to a depot, and they don't tell you that, well, there's this thing called the Geek Squad at Best Buy, and if you have $300, they'll be happy to get the porn off your computer, and then tell you that you need a system update and sell you another $30 cable.
Ecard Oshinsky says, "Hey, mine's dropped twice on the sidewalk without a scratch. I must be dropping it wrong." So I have not broken mine. I have not broken mine, not once, any phone. But these are my kids who have clearly different standards for how things drop. According to Mac Rumors, great site, love that, Arnold Kim writing, Apple's working on allowing the merging of multiple Apple IDs. This has been kind of painful. I have a couple of Apple IDs, and one I can't even log into anymore. I changed the password and immediately says, "No, you've tried too many times. It's just broken. I got to call them." But it would be nice to merge all of these. They're not doing it yet, are they?
No. So it's interesting because Tim Cook's really, really responsive with his emails. So people have been emailing him ever since he became official CEO. And there's been a lot of reports of, he gets a lot of one-word thanks replies, but then other times he seems to forward issues on to the right people, and then they get in touch with the customers.
And these are pretty nicely done. Look, he says, "Hi, Sheldon." Well, wait a minute, that's from Eddie. Who's Eddie?
Eddie Q. He's
Eddie Q.
Services.
Okay.
Internet services for Apple.
So
now,
he's responding too. That's very cool.
Yeah. So I think Cook triages his emails, or someone does.
Forwards it over.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has the office of the president or office of the CEO who's going through all of that stuff.
Sure. But the MobileMe one, two people actually got the same response. They actually got a phone call about it saying, "Yes, we understand that this is an issue where you have multiple IDs and you can't, and you want to merge them.
Right.
I'm sorry, we can't do it right now, but I've talked to whoever is responsible for that, and they said they're working on it. So
stay tuned.
Look forward to it." Right. So, and it's clearly going to be a big problem, especially with iCloud. Even with the automatic downloads, it's an issue. I don't know if you've tried using the automatic downloads.
I have, but it's great. But
if you have more than one account, they lock you for 90 days, and you can't switch it again. So you kind of have to commit.
Oh, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So pick your account.
Switch, right.
90 days. That's on the phone?
That's on the phone and the computer, I think.
Hmm. All right. Well, this is good to know. I didn't expect that. All right. Go ahead.
It really is a mess. As a matter of fact, it's in some ways, I wish that we could sort of split the accounts, because I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about the number of different ways my Mac experience could be totally screwed up if somebody knows what my iCloud or Mac address is and what that one password is. That one password used to just control, "Hey, I'm just going to sync a few things and I'm going to buy some things off the iTunes store." But now it's the key to every transaction you ever do with Apple. And I've kind of had to change it from like the sort of simple one to the complicated one that's a little bit harder to remember. And now it's all the way down to the one that's, I need a mnemonic device to remember exactly what this password is, because I'm a little bit creeped out by the idea of one password that gives people access to a lot of my financial stuff, a lot of ability to buy things on the Apple Store and elsewhere. And I'm sorry, not in the Apple Store, but you know the online stores. Digital downloads. I don't mean that people could buy things otherwise, but also access to iCloud syncing. All based on one password that is so easy to just, because you blow through that first screen when you get your new machine and you might choose, you know, donuts. And then you forget about it because it's being autofilled. And now you've got this really weak password that could really be the key to a lot of mayhem.
Yeah. I hear from a lot of people who have, my account was hacked. It's very, you know, these are the people who call the radio show and they have lots of stories about this kind of stuff. And it's because they picked donuts. Absolutely. Samsung is, according to Mac Rumors, Samsung is making plans to target it. Actually, this comes originally from the Korea Times. To target the iPhone 5 with patent lawsuits the minute it comes out. Now, they can't do it until it comes out. And, of course, Apple's been suing Samsung, trying to stop its products, barring, for instance, the Galaxy Tab from sales in Germany. And trying to do the same in Australia. As soon as the iPhone 5 comes out, according to the Korea Times, unnamed officials from Samsung say they're going to go right after it, including NFC, if an NFC is built in. Google just announced yesterday its Google Wallet using this NFC, near-field communications chip, but it's only in one phone, only in one carrier. It's the Galaxy S on Sprint. And that's it. Nexus S. Sprint.
Nexus 4G.
So you have to have that one phone. But then, if you have that phone, and you're in San Francisco or New York, and you're on Sprint, and you're at a merchant that takes it, then you can use your phone to pay. Wow! But it's early. It's early days.
And you have to have MasterCard, too.
You could charge it up with any card, though, right? But there is a special card that'll work with it.
MasterCard and Visa and American Express and all of that is coming.
But you,
that magic voice, by the way, I know you're looking, you're saying, where's the woman? That is Zylene Rivera, who is not only the producer of this show and running in the board op for this show, but she's also the host of All About Android, so she knows a little bit about this.
Yeah, we talked about it last night.
Yeah, they already did. It's air all over it. Will Apple release a white iPod Touch? Everybody talks about this October event as if it's an iPhone event, but it's usually an iPod event. Arnold, do we know anything about iPod releases for next month?
Yeah, so I think what's going to happen, and it's a little bit of a disappointment, I guess, is that there will be a white iPod Touch, and
that's nice.
And what it sounds like, still the black iPod Touch, and not much different. So I think a lot of people were hoping that there would be a major upgrade to the iPod Touch as well as the iPhone, but from what we heard, it sounds like the white iPod Touch may be really it in terms of the iPod line as to what they're changing. So I don't even know if it's going to get. Doesn't even sound like it's going to get an A5 processor.
Wow! So it needs a better camera. I wouldn't worry about anything but a better camera. If it would just have a better camera.
Right. Right. There was a lot of people were very unhappy with the iPod Touch camera when it came out because it's like a. Yeah, it's like a, I don't even remember the resolution. It's like 1 megapixel, so.
Yeah, it's the worst. It is. It's literally a megapixel. And it could be so good. You know, I think Apple's probably smart because I think people are actually, I believe they're actually buying the iPhone for the camera. And that's how good that camera is on the iPhone.
Yeah, there's also been a lot of talk about, you know, and again, these are, I think, you know, as Apple gets more popular, the rumors get sort of insane because everyone sort of throws in their 2 cents, or you know, if they hear any little thing, it sort of becomes a rumor. So one discussion point was, is Apple going to make the iPhone so cheap, the iPhone 4, I guess, presumably the low-end iPhone, so cheap that the iPod Touch is not as appealing, or it will not be as appealing? Because if you have a low-end iPhone that costs the same, let's say, off-contract as an iPod Touch, then why wouldn't you buy the iPhone? And I guess the only other reason is the iPod Touch is thinner, if that matters to you.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I know Gruber had, John Gruber had argued that in Apple's best interest is if they can pump up their iPhone numbers, because no one seems to count the iPod Touch for anything in terms of all these market share numbers. people say, oh, there's so-and-so many Android phones or so-and-so many iPhones.
Right.
But the iPod Touch is sort of neglected from those calculations. Mm.
But has Apple really ever cared about market share numbers? They care more about profitability.
Profit numbers. That's what they care about.
Also, the thing that I've always found interesting, that surprised me a little bit about the iPod Touch, because I kind of, it's not very much on my radar, but then people are explaining to me who have kids that they like to buy their kids iPod Touches because it's kind of like giving them an iPhone without all the things that would make the parents worry about the kid having an iPhone. If you take out like the internet everywhere
exactly.
and the phone features, and you say, well, if you really do want to send naughty messages to your friends at school, you are going to have to be in a public library or a McDonald's or a Starbucks to make that happen.
Well, and there's a market. I think there's a fairly large market, maybe not huge from Apple's point of view, of people who want a PDA still, and they don't want to have to spend $90 a month on data plans. They just want Wi-Fi PDA, and the iPod Touch is really a great choice for them. They get all the apps. They get, you know, you could basically do everything you could do with an iPhone except make calls, and maybe they already have a feature phone or whatever, but they just want to do it.
Yeah.
I think this is good. The App Store is now warning you. There's been a problem with forking on the App Store where, in fact, I have a number of applications that I've repurchased. I bought online originally on the website of the company and then bought it on the App Store just so I wouldn't have to keep track of where I got it and the updates would be built in. But that's a problem, of course, because you may have already paid for it, and then if you get it from the App Store, you're going to have to buy it again. So now they're putting up a warning. It's saying Program X is already installed and was not purchased from the App Store. Do you want to buy it again? Unfortunately, it doesn't get triggered all the time. The apps have to be exactly the same version. So you still have to be a little careful when you're installing from the App Store. Try to remember where you got it, kids. That's why I pay for it again.
Yeah, I mean, just yesterday.
It's frustrating,
Well, also because I think this points to the reason why Apple's trying to keep app prices low, because if someone has a choice between buying into the App Store or having to find their installed DVDs all over again, oftentimes they're going to say, okay, you know what? Keynote is just $19.99. I'll buy it through the App Store, and that way I will never have to look for that DVD ever again. I'll never have to authenticate ever again, and all the updates will be a lot easier to pull off. That's what I did yesterday.
Yep, that's what I do. Speaking of updates from the App Store, here's a really big one, one we've been waiting for here at the old Twit Brick House. Final Cut Pro 10.0.1, but don't be fooled by that version number, which makes it sound like a minor update. It's pretty significant. For instance, they now have an XML format that can be imported and exported for other programs to read. And for us, a huge thing, it supports XSAN, which it did not before. Now, I'm hoping it'll support non-Apple SANs. Because that's how we do our editing. We're looking at changing to Premiere because the new version of Final Cut Pro 10 does not support saving and editing from a SAN drive. Mm. So I'm hoping that maybe this will work. We don't know yet. But this is a big, big update, even though it's only 10.0.1. It's going to make a huge difference to us, and it might keep us in Apple shop. I'm not promising. Full screen view in OS X Lion is now enabled. Can't believe it wasn't. I'm not a Final Cut expert, so I'm not sure what else is important in here. Speed up delivery with GPU accelerated export. That sounds like something we'd need. Export audio and video stems as a single multi-track QuickTime movie. Whatever. At least it's free, right?
It does point to, like, people think that Apple is a supremely arrogant company that doesn't really pay attention, and they're at least partly right. But they look at the numbers as much as anybody else, and if they see that it's a decision that they made just is not going down with anybody, that's when you start to see a reversal or a modification, and that's when they start to. There will never be a press release. I suppose the one difference is that Apple TV was the one time when they said, okay,
we screwed
up. It was just a hobby, but it was a hobby in which we did not have any idea why people would want a device like this. Okay, please try it again. But this is more typical to what they do, where they'll say, you know what, maybe it is okay to have the old version of Final Cut available. And if you really do feel so badly about it that I saw you being taken out to lunch by that nice rep from Adobe, why don't we just slip a new few features that we initially thought were not going to be important, or more likely this a feature that was fought long and hard about inside an office. One side won, one side lost, and the losing side said, "Yep, you see? You see, that's why I threw that cup of water in your face. Not because I'm a mean guy, but because I didn't think you were listening."
Let us take a break. When we come back, we will have more to talk about. We also have our picks of the week coming up. Arnold Kim is here, and I have some emails to macbreak@twit.tv, by the way. That's our new address, macbreak@twit.tv. Some emails have come in. Arnold Kim is here. He is the editor-in-chief of actually, that's not the title you give yourself, is it? It's editorial director.
Yes. Of Eric is editor-in-chief. All right. He's more the day-to-day.
You just sit there and enjoy the fruits of your labor, literally. Actually, I really want to talk about this Intel Ivy Bridge story because it's something near and dear to my heart. We will do that in just a second. Thank you for being here, Arnold. It's great. Alex Lindsay,
yep, thanks for having
me. Assignment today. And Andy Anacco, also here from New York, New York, where he's about to speak to the Sloan Kettering Institute about cancer treatment in oncological affairs. Because that many people don't know that, but that's his real expertise.
I dabble. You always have the dream about turning your hobby into a career. Well, I think I'm just this close to it.
Dr. Mom says, "Hey, that's my talk." He stole it from you, Dr. Mom. Stole it from the best. Before we go much farther, I want to tell you about Gazelle.com. There is a new, I am convinced, I don't have any crystal ball, but I am convinced there is a new iPhone coming. There are new iPods coming. Some even say there are new iPads coming. And when the time has come to buy a new gadget, please rid yourself of the old gadget. You don't want to be like me with a drawer, a closet, and an entire... Actually, I have a friend. His name is John C. Dvorak, who rents an entire office above a gas station to store his old gadgets. He just throws them in there. I'll never forget, it was in the early days of doing the radio show with him, 1991. I said, "John, I need a modem." He said, "Well, come over to the gas station." And he opens the door like Fibber McGee's closet. The gadgets are starting to come out. And he's like, "Go in there. There's a modem in there." And I go in, and it's like five different modems. I pick one. I come out. Push the door shut. Don't let that happen to you. Get paid for your gadgets. $25 million worth of gadgets have been paid for, bought by Gazelle. This is such a great way to do it, too. Your data is safe. When they get your gadget, they will wipe it for you with their personal data service. They recycle gadgets that aren't worth anything in green recyclers that never send it offshore and never put it in landfills. All you have to do is go to gazelle.com, type in the gadget you've got to get rid of, a smartphone, an MP3 player, ebook reader, laptop, camera, gaming console, GPS device, video game. I'm going to keep this Apple 3GS, iPhone 3GS, because I like it. It's kind of a backup for me. I'm just curious. It's a 3GS 16 gigabyte. All right. And now, man, no noticeable flaws. It's brand new. I replaced. Yeah, I have the. There's no AC. Well, I'll say. Yes, actually, there is. There's that little plug, isn't there? Yep, I have that. Free from water damage? Yes, it is. That's not the one that went in the swimming pool. Look at that. Look at that. That pays for the new iPhone, practically. So here's the deal. So now I've got the offer. I can add it to the box, and that's kind of cool. So I'll just throw it in a box, any box, a shipping box, obviously. And I can continue to go through gadgets. Just add them that quickly. You see how easy it is? And then when it's time to check out, they'll give me they'll print out a mailing label for me, so they pay all the postage. Actually, they email it to you, and they also email you updates as the process goes, so you know exactly what's going on. And then you get paid, and you can get paid in a variety of ways. Amazon cards. In fact, if you use a Walmart an Amazon gift card, you get a 5% bonus on the value of your gadget. Walmart gift cards, PayPal, check. Or, and I love this, you can ask Gazelle to donate the value of your gadget to charity. iPads, between $227 and $304. Kindles, Nooks, and other ebook readers going for $28 to $66. iPhone 3 and 3GS, as you just saw, $100 to $177. MacBooks, up to $265 for a MacBook Core 2 Duo. Can you believe that? Gazelle it, my friends. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Keep it moving is their slogan. Pay it forward. Don't let those gadgets, that unsightly gadget mess, build up in your home. Don't sell it. Gazelle it. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. We use it all the time, actually, and it's really been a boon for us. I just love it. So this story just out, and I'm really excited about this, on MacRumors.com. Ivy Bridge. This Intel's, you know, it's sad because last week was Microsoft's big Build conference and all the attention going to Windows 8. Intel, unfortunately, scheduled their developers forum exactly the same week, so they didn't get as much ink. It's too bad because this is pretty exciting. And these are the chips that will be in the next generation Macintoshes, by the way. The Ivy Bridge processors will support 4K HD video. That's four times higher resolution than HD. 4,096 by 4,096 pixels. That's pretty exciting. That if you've ever seen a 4K video, it's like looking through a window. It's amazing. Yeah. And I presume that this is the kind of thing that Apple will jump on. In fact, Lion has already has 4K support built into it, apparently.
There's been a lot of it's been of interest to me too, because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, once Apple introduced a Retina display for the iPhone, everyone right. was like, oh, I can't wait till, you know, and then, you know, you kind of, when you first hear about it, you think, oh, how much better could it be? And then you actually use it. And you're like, wow.
It's like, whoa. Great.
Right. So everyone's like, oh, how can we get, you know, when are we going to get like desktop displays? Because honestly, desktop displays have been kind of stagnant for the last few years. I mean, I've had this 30-inch for a while. I don't think you can get much better than this, right?
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It would be amazing to have. How big is the resolution on the 30?
2560 by 1600.
Okay, so it's actually not that high resolution compared to this 4096 by 4096. Obviously, you'd have to get a new display.
I'm saying, but yeah, you think, but the DPIs, I guess, haven't been increasing over the years that much.
Right.
And a lot of that's due to software issues, you know, with Mac OS X, everything's going to shrink down.
When we first started doing MacBreak video, that insane Alex Lindsay put it out as 1080p video, and you couldn't play it back. And this was only a couple of years ago. It would just stutter. I mean, if you were lucky enough to have a 1080 screen, you just couldn't play it back. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a big improvement. Now, people are pointing out that it's not 16.9, and that's true. And I'm not sure exactly what that's all about. But that's what the Intel slide says, 4,096 by 4,096, which is square.
Yeah, I think they just mean they can push that many pixels, whatever shape it comes in. I'm not sure.
I get it. It's still 4K.
Yeah, and presumably there's third-party graphics cards that already support 4K video. But I guess the key here is that this is going into the MacBook Air, the next MacBook Air, the Ivy Bridge chips, and they don't have enough room to put, or enough, I guess, heat expenditure. They don't have the heat allowance to put in a third-party GPU, so they have to use Intel. So the trick here, or the subtle point here, is that presumably the next MacBook Air could support these resolution screens. Whereas, if you have a Mac Pro, you can put in whatever video, you can put in a $500 video card and get whatever you want.
There's enough cooling in there and so forth.
Right. But this one will actually be available through, like, down to the low end.
In a laptop.
Right, to the MacBook Air line.
Well, you're going to be really glad now that you have that port.
Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt,
yeah.
The whatchamacallit, because then you can go out to that big display from your little computer.
Oh, you know, when they come up with a new hickamadoodle-based backpack,
that's going to be...
wish you could wait another year. But when I'm reading about this, though, I'm trying to figure out exactly how that would translate into a direct feature. That I think that Apple would be really, really happy if they didn't ship a single Mac that didn't support really good full 1080i or 1080 or 720 video. But is there really a need for a Retina level 30-inch display? Because a 30-inch display, you're going to have that at least 18 inches away from you.
Right.
And at that point, are you going to really appreciate that kind of dot pitch? Or is this the sort of thing where they're just saying that if this is a feature, this is going to be a feature in every one of the Macs that we have the Pro designation. Although we appreciate that only people who are having a Mac Pro might be doing the sort of work where they might want to actually see 4K video.
Wow!
So it's a cool chip feature. It can only translate into cool things. Like the release says, it seems to be a free feature that you get with every one of these chips, as opposed to we'll add another $350 bonus SKU to the product line to give it the special 4K video equipped Macs. But I think we can't be quite so literal in thinking about how this is going to translate into a new Mac.
Well, I think the dream though is not a high DPI 30-inch screen so much as your 11-inch MacBook with twice the dots per inch, so a really high density laptop display, which whatever the I think that's what I've been sort of, you know, with all these developments, has been sort of in my mind is, when are we going to get a MacBook Pro that you can buy that isn't 1440x900 and it's 2880x1800, and then right. suddenly everything is that much sharper or smaller. Yeah.
I mean, getting a higher resolution, I think, is a natural. But I think it will stop way, way short of fully exploiting what that chip can do. Because great, now we have hardware that can support that kind of screen density. How much is it going to cost to have any sort of a mobile screen that can support that kind of resolution? And yeah. And not only that, but when it comes time to actually build these sort of things, how many duds are they going to is the factory going to produce for every one usable one? I mean, it's okay if you're doing like cut rate laptops where you're going to say, you know what, half the screen is kind of purple, the other screen is a little bit plaid, but you know what? What do people want for $1,400? Perfection, ship it anyway.
Maybe
be a lot more.
We faced these problems before, though. They've got LCD yields way up now, and they've got prices way down. It's just, you know, it's not going to be next year. I agree with you, Andy, but I think it's going to happen, and it's going to be amazing when you are holding a laptop in front of you with that kind of resolution. It's going to be mind-boggling, I think. But it's not. You're right. It's not next year.
I would love to see an engineering sample and see not like a super high def display, but see the exact same screen that I'm seeing right now. But then appreciate that the little text, like the little bookmark, the text in the bookmark bar. Will I notice that it's that much sharper and is it that much clearer to read? And are we gonna? Or I think if all we get out of this is that now, like all the menu bar icons are going to be 256 dots and 16 million colors. Like, okay, maybe we could do better than that.
I have to say, having seen 4K displays at CES before, that it's more than just more detail. It really is. It fools the brain. It really looks. It's real. The brain thinks it's seeing reality. It's there's so little difference between what your eyes are seeing in the real world and what you're seeing on that screen that the brain just goes, I'm looking through a window. That's real. That's moving. It's amazing. Truckee in our chat room gives us this update that the LaCie hard drive we've been waiting for, the $399 terabyte Thunderbolt drive, is coming to the Apple Store. It's available for 2 to 3 week shipping at the Apple Store right now, so it's coming in the next couple of weeks. It took them a while. It's been a year, I think, since that Thunderbolt was LaCie Thunderbolt hard drive was announced.
Yeah,
terabyte for $399 is a little pricey, but it's not awful.
Yeah, it's about twice what you'd pay for any good name brand drive that supports USB 2
for external,
and probably the same. A FireWire 800 drive would only cost you about $175, $180.
Right.
But it depends on if you really need that kind of throughput.
Well, you know who does. It's Alex Lindsay, and now I know why he's not here. He's probably picking one up right now. Maybe he'll go to Shanghai this Friday. The Apple retail store, the Nanjing East retail store, opens on Friday. And then Saturday, these are massive stores, by the way. On Saturday, the Hong Kong store opens up, 15,000 square feet of Apple Store goodness, and it will be opening up this Saturday, 9 a.m. I imagine people are going to be lining up. These big store openings are a lot of fun, and they often have big giveaways too. Speaking of stores, you can now buy online in the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, and the United Arab Emirates. The official Apple online store is now available in four new languages. I don't know why the Emirates didn't get Arabic. Maybe because it's right to left. Email doesn't. I don't know. That's weird. But the confetti's, by the way, notice, this is cool. I thought this is the same graphic backdrop, but Mac Rumors points it out. The confetti is in each color, country's national color. Ooh, nice. Nicely played, Apple. Well played.
That'll fix everything.
John Sculley interview, a very interesting interview with, not sure, is who is this, the Financial Times? Finns Technology. Sculley talking about, of course, he was at PepsiCo when Steve Jobs very famously wooed him to come to Apple in 1983, saying you can continue selling sugar water to kids or you can come with me and change the world. Sculley did, and he changed Apple, firing Steve Jobs shortly after. It's interesting. Boy, is this I highly recommend this interview. And Sculley has some regrets about how Steve was treated. He says the way it went is that the board decided to remove Jobs from the Macintosh project, the project he had shepherded to bring. And this was just before Macintosh came out, I believe, to remove him from that. It was such a blow. They did keep him on as chairman of the board. It was such a blow to Steve that 6 months later he just quit outright. And interestingly, Sculley has not spoken to Jobs ever since. He says it's still a, this is John Sculley talking, it's still a very painful story because we were not just business colleagues, we were good friends. We spent a tremendous amount of time together. I think the separation was driven by Steve being in a real funk because the Macintosh, which he developed, was failing in early 1985. And I had forgotten this. His vision was ahead of its time. The power of the microprocessor, that 68,000, I think it was a one megahertz 68,000 in there, wasn't enough to do what he wanted to do, and Mac sales were falling off. The board made a decision. They asked Steve to step down as the head of the Mac division. He would still remain as chairman of the board, but that was an incredible blow to the man who created the product. He was extremely hurt and pained by it. Sculley says he came from corporate America. He was used to this kind of stuff, but he says that's not what you do with the founders of companies. Steve and I had a legitimate difference of opinion. Sculley wanted to keep the cash cow that was the Apple II going. Jobs really wanted to move the company toward the Mac. He says the emotional blow of the board asking him to step down from his role leading the Mac division was incredibly hurtful to him. I didn't realize how painful that had to have been. He says Steve went off on sabbatical some months later, came back, resigned from the company, took five executives with him, started Next. He says, I appreciate more today that Apple was never just a business to Steve. Apple is Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs is Apple. That was entirely different from anything I'd experienced coming out of Pepsi. So that has gone on for 25 years, and we have not had contact. He said, in the past, I've tried to reach out to Jobs, and he never had any interest in reengaging. He clearly blames me. And then the final thing he says, which is kind of, it's kind of a might have been. He says, I wish Steve and I hadn't had a falling out. I wish I had gone back to Steve and said, this is your company. Let's figure out how you can come back and be CEO. I wish I'd thought of that, but you can't change history. Imagine what Apple would be if that had happened, if Jobs had stayed on board. Of course, he came back. What was it? He left in 85, came back in 97. So it came back 12 years later to a company that was falling apart and turned it around completely.
It's hard to imagine, though, how different it would be, because remember that the operating system that we're all running right now is essentially Next Step,
right,
which wouldn't have existed had he not started a brand new company with a handful of people who were really very much free to do whatever they wanted, any operating system they wanted. I think we all remember what it was like, all the different strategies that Apple had for next generation operating system that just blue boxes and pink boxes and red boxes and different kinds of composers used as code names without any sort of coherent strategy as to what was going to ship and what any of the goals were. So it's also interesting to it's given that all of modern Mac history has been about Apple being not only led by Steve Jobs but led in a very hands-on, no-nonsense fashion by Steve Jobs. It's hard to remember a time when he actually was not the top person on the org chart. And there was a time when it was possible for him to be forced out by anybody.
Now, you make a really good point. I think that you're right. I think Steve had to wander in the wilderness. He became a better executive because of it. Of course, they developed Next Step, which became OS 10. And I think he even says that he learned a lot after leaving Apple at Next and then at Pixar about running a company, something he didn't really know anything about. So I think you're right. I think that it's interesting how it all played out. But maybe John Sculley shouldn't have any regrets. We might not have the Apple we have today had he not forced Jobs out into the wilderness.
Yeah, he went on a Campbellian hero's journey.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Just like Simba in The Lion King. He had to be cast out of the pride.
and I think we do call John Sculley Scar, as a matter of fact. Not to his face. Couple of
a cool voice.
is Scar played by Alan Rickman? Who played? They've re-released
Jeremy Irons.
They've re-released The Lion King in 3D, and it is huge again. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Jeremy Irons, thank you. Chat room knew that too. You saw the shout out. I played it on Twit that Steve Jobs got from Stevie Wonder. He was performing in a concert on Saturday in Echo Park, and on stage said, "Hey, I just want to shout out to a guy who's going through tough times right now, but a guy who really made a difference for people like me, blind people, by making Macintosh and iOS accessible." And he said, he said a big thank you, really. I thought that was really, really moving. And apparently there's a rap song dedicated.
Don't play it.
Eileen knows me so well. It's apparently very not safe for work.
I would only play the very end, which is the only part that mentions Steve Jobs.
That's okay. It's okay. Hustle Game Boss on Twitter says, "Check it and download my new song, Steve Jobs, here for free." And he's a rapper from Buffalo, New York. And it's a rap song to Steve Jobs. But the last few lines... That's why it never bothers me when I can't even say this. Those guys copy all my moves. My competition's hollow. My product sets the standard for the rest of y'all to follow. Steve Jobs. It's just a brilliant marketing ploy on the part of the supreme boss, supreme general. Just, you know, put Steve Jobs in the last word of the song and we'll all talk about it. From Infinite Loop on Ars Technica, Chris Forsman writing, we may be seeing new iMacs in 2011. We just got new iMacs not so long ago. Mid-2011 and late 2011 iMacs in this Apple Knowledge Base article.
I don't think that's true, actually, though. The late 2011 iMac, they took the reference out, but Apple called the educational iMac the late 2011 iMac, the one that was released, the $999 one.
So even though it came out earlier in 2011, that's what they call the late 2011.
Well, it came out in August.
That's late.
And there's a knowledge base article that labels it the late 2011. The mistake was that it was included in a Thunderbolt article, and it doesn't have Thunderbolt.
So
there was a mistake somewhere, but I don't think. Yep. That means there'll be another iMac out.
See, this is why we read Mac rumors. Because Arnold knows! He's got the analytics smarts. Back to school, Mac sales outpace PCs even without the white iMac. NPD Group saying that Apple grew much faster than the Windows notebook market did in the September quarter. Or maybe pre-September quarter. I don't know if they would know. They do, always do that promotion in August. In this case, $100 App Store gift card with the purchase of a Mac. Last year, they got an iPod Touch, but which was worth more, twice as much, in fact. But it seems to have not hindered sales for education. Interesting. Maybe I'm curious. What do you guys think now that you've seen it of the of Windows 8?
Andy? I think it's fantastic. I've got it running on my in a VirtualBox on my Mac here. I also have an older Windows machine back home that's running it natively, and I think there's a lot of great potential here. I would love to see a couple of really nice, higher, more ambitious Metro apps realize that to really see what it's like to live in this new user interface and try to actually get work done. Because all the sample apps that are written for Metro right now are just little doodad sort of things. Remember that just got released to developers last week. But the first time they get to see like an iPad style text editor that works, that can do like a whole column on, and then see how easy it would be to live entirely in the Metro environment, because there really is a nice level of commitment where you start off and it's not as though you can launch an app and you have to launch yourself into the special environment. No, that is where you wind up. You wind up in tile land, and you only wind up looking at the classic Windows interface when you find yourself into that end of the rabbit hole that will dump you out in Windows 7 land, because otherwise you could spend your entire work day, your entire work week looking at nothing but Metro apps, and it looks very, very nice. I can't wait to see what it's like to use this on a tablet, because I'm just obviously using it with just like the mouse pad and the keyboard. And even with the keyboard, it's impressive, but it really is an interface. It really wants to be tapped and swiped and squeezed and pinched. So this is just a developer edition at this point, but I really like what I'm seeing, and I can't wait to see the next version.
That's the thing that struck me. I mean, it's very clearly at least this new start menu. It's very clearly a tablet interface. I'm logging in right now, also in virtualization on my Mac. But I was wondering how a business would take to it, how people using desktops and laptops would take to it, because it is so tablomatic, you know.
Well, it does work very well on a keyboard keyboard and mouse, because if you have a newer Windows machine that has a nice big multi-touch trackpad, I think it would work just about as well as a new MacBook Air does with Lion. They're keyboard equivalents to everything, and just as with Lion, you do like the multi-touch stuff for the trackpad, but as soon as you realize that, oh, I can just actually hit this key to switch between apps instead of having to swipe anything, you do learn that. I think it's kind of interesting, though, that whereas Apple was very, very quick to say that quick to release versions of iWork for iPad and then the iPhone, Microsoft hasn't even implied whether or not there's going to be anything Office-like from Microsoft that will take advantage of Metro. It could be that it's just so early in the process that there's still lots and lots of those conference room fights going on at Microsoft about what Metro really is, and are we going to claim that this is sort of like the Windows Me version of Windows, whereas Windows, the classic interface will still be for the real professional apps, or should we really go all in here and just make sure that everything that we do has an articulation for the Metro interface? I think that there's less confusion so much as this is still very much an ongoing discussion, I think, that Microsoft is having. But like I said, it's just such a natural way of working that can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they won't have a switch that says, please put me in the normal Windows mode for businesses and people who just don't want to be using this.
Yeah.
Well, Paul Theroux saying that the next version of Office is going to use the Metro interface.
Okay, well, does he mean that it's... Remember, the Metro, one of the hallmarks of real Metro interface is that it's like the iPad. There are no overlapping windows. It's just one big full-screen window and maybe a sidebar. Does he mean that there's going to be Metro design cues implemented in like the standard Windows interface, or are they really going to have like sort of a really sharp partition between what's expected of Metro and what's expected of classic Windows?
Good question. I'll ask him. I don't know. I interpret it to be full screen, you know, Metro style, but I don't know. Yeah.
Because this is probably the third major thing we've seen the Metro interface in, the first one being like the last version of the Zune, the second one being Windows Phone, and now we're actually finally seeing it on a desktop. So I don't know whether they mean design cues or what.
Right.
But it's interesting. If you played with this is not Windows Break Weekly, but...
Well, it's relevant because I think this is clearly a response to the iPad. I mean, there's no question in my mind.
I just think it's really interesting to see how kind of fractured the whole experience is. When you're in Metro, it's wonderful, and it would look really great on a tablet in any form. Even if you couldn't, there's some controversy still about whether or not you will be able to run Windows, like classic Windows overlapping apps on a low power tablet, or whether that's going to be a Metro-only experience. But when you look at on a desktop on the Windows, the classic Windows experience, you start to see not only a lack of that elegant tiled interface, but it's almost as if this is where all the people who hated Metro at Microsoft and did not work in that project wound up. And they are sort of raising a middle finger at that side of the screen.
Right.
Because now there's a new, huge, immense ribbon in Windows Explorer that every time you're – if you're looking like at a pictures library, now there's a ribbon inside the window that has every single task that's possibly could be related to dealing with a photo library.
Right.
And if you're a brand new user, I suppose it's kind of cool to be able to literally open up like the takeout menu and say, okay, I want the peanut noodles with shrimp, spicy peanut noodles. But it does mean that God help you if you're going to need a 4K display to get right. All of this user interface in just one window.
Well, this was always a complaint I had about the ribbon. And Microsoft said we had to do the ribbon because people didn't – if we don't surface these commands, nobody ever finds them.
Yeah.
So putting them in the menu isn't enough.
That's an interesting point of view. I think it's ugly, and I think it's clumsy, but they might be proven right here,
right?
Because one of the things that's been occurring to me about iOS and with macOS is that when we first were introduced to the Macintosh, you could write out everything you need to know beforehand on one side of a business card and have room for a phone number. There's really almost nothing you needed that wasn't available to you and explorable and discoverable. Now you really do need to know that you see this gray piece of glass that's in front of your keyboard. Here is the library of gestures that activate certain things. There's this thing called Mission Control that you have to look into the dock to find it, because here's places where you should start looking for features. Here are times when you should just sort of randomly hold down the Option key while you click on things just to see if anything interesting happens, like you're playing the first level of a video game and you keep getting killed. So I think Microsoft is wrong here in trying to put more interface visible. But we'll find out when this thing ships, and it's possible that people who have been frustrated by Windows for a long time are going to say, "Yes, I have no idea that I could do that with this with a pictures library. I had no idea that it was possible for me to share this file with like everybody who's inside my work group." These were features that were already always in Windows, but there was never a button saying "share this with my work group" or "share this and click to drag names into this" to figure out who's going to be able to see this folder and put files into it. But the bigger point is that it's interesting that this is the difference between Apple's point of view saying that we want to have an entirely dedicated device, an entirely dedicated operating system, where the whole design language is, if it's possible for us to hide a control, we will hide that control. If it's possible to make this display more clean and have fewer distractions, we're going to do that, even if sometimes it means you're going to have to read, let's say, a CD booklet to find out how to use things. Whereas Microsoft is saying, nope, we want one grand unified operating system that will articulate itself on any device and in any different app. And if it means that people have to sort of have a computer that's like a sugar frosted mini wheat, you know, it's got the sugar frosted side, but then the entire other shredded wheat side that you cannot see until you flip it over. It's an interesting battle that's going to be coming up in 2012 and 2013, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I commend them for their guts. I have some real skepticism about whether one size fits all is gonna work. And I agree with you. That's kind of where it's gonna boil down. Arnold, have you played with it? Do you care at all?
No, I care. I found it very interesting. I find the whole movement towards the Metro, the interface, very surprising for Microsoft to take such a bold step.
It is.
I haven't played with it though, so I haven't installed it. I haven't messed with it. I've just seen some of the early videos. I mean, in my mind, what was interesting is that once this becomes the normal Windows interface, like, you know, if once millions of people start using it, I wonder what will happen to Windows phone market share, because suddenly the Windows phones will be familiar.
Right.
I mean, because currently you pick up a Windows mobile phone, Windows, I don't even know the right name, Windows Mobile 7 phone, and and it's very foreign. I mean, if you haven't used one before, and I've messed with one briefly, but it just felt foreign to me at the time, but pretty soon the Metro interface, I mean, you know, it'll all sort of converge for on the Windows side at least. So
I'm sure that's kind of the point from Microsoft.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And suddenly suddenly Windows will be just a very familiar option as a phone once that becomes prevalent.
It's interesting because their first attempt at a Windows phone was shrinking Microsoft Windows down to phone size. Miserable flop. You don't need a start menu on a phone. Now they're doing the opposite. They said, we'll make a phone operating system and we'll blow it up to fit to the desktop. And I think in both cases, I think what Apple's done is a little more sensible, which is there is, you know, there's a similarity. There's a core a similarity between the two. But, you know, and they say OS X is at the core of iOS and all of that. But it's very clear. There's a touch portable operating system, and there's a truck-based operating system, a desktop operating system. And I don't mind the Lion full screen and stuff like that and the gestures on the desktop, but it's still fundamentally a desktop computer with some tablet-y gloss.
Don't you think that... I always thought that the Launchpad and the App Store were the first steps to making Apple's version of... This looks just like an iOS device you're familiar with already. So it's sort of the opposite of where Microsoft's trying to go, trying to familiarize everyone with on the desktop and then go have them jump over to mobile too. There's millions of iOS devices out there. So is Apple? I didn't think Lion would do it, but I thought pretty soon we would see sort of this iOS shell, which is basically Launchpad plus Mac App Store, that would be the default for. Mom and pop walking into an Apple store saying, I want to buy a computer.
Well, and that, I guess that you can say that both Apple and Microsoft are both trying from different points of view to deal with the same issue, which is that the desktop might be dead or dying and that the future is in a more intimate interface. And how do we migrate to that?
Yeah. There's sort of a tell here that something that Apple is doing isn't quite working, though. Here I am. I'm just going to be gone for 24 or 36 hours from my office. I've got one small project where I need desktop apps. And so, once again, I'm traveling with my MacBook and my iPad.
Right.
Whereas, if Apple decided to make a tablet that's sort of like the developer tablet, the i5-based developer tablet that went out, where it has this shape, to it, so that when I'm on Amtrak, I just want to read some books, or I just wanted to casually, catch up with news. It acts like this, but then when I get into my hotel room, I turn it like this and put it on a cheap plastic stand and get out my Bluetooth keyboard and my Bluetooth mouse, and it is a full functioning desktop computer that has that really cool multi-touch, like iPad-like interface, but occasionally can open itself up and be multi-windowing so I can manage like three different apps and multiple like research sources. If that were a $800 computer, I wouldn't really care that in tablet mode it only works for about 4 hours on battery. I might not necessarily care that it has a fan that will start blowing when I'm playing Flash video or doing something kind of strenuous. That's an interesting product, and I think that when Apple has really knocked it, they will figure out a way that I can always travel with just this and never have to take take something more substantial with me.
Maybe
that'll be an unattainable goal, but that's kind of an interesting observation.
I think that's where they're heading. I think that that's where both companies are heading from and taking it from different ends of the same thing. And it is an interesting thing to watch. Of course, we're the wrong guys to ask. At least I'm the wrong guy to ask because I'm an old fart and I just want my desktop and my laptop. That's what I like. I like how it used to be. Give me a command line. We're going to take a break, come back with our Apple iOS tip of the day, our Lion tip of the day, and our picks of the week. Arnold Kim is here from MacRumors.com. Great to have you, Arnold. Andy Yanako from the Chicago Sun-Times. And we're going to take a little tiny time out here to talk about hover.com. You can go to macbreak.hover.com. I was watching football last night, and there was again the GoDaddy ad, and it's like, I don't get it. they're focused on hot chicks and not on domain registration. Excuse me, I just want to register a domain name. Would you mind? Hover gets out of your way, gets it done with fewer clicks. It's domain names made simple. If you go to macbreak.hover.com, you can find out all about it. I moved all my domains over to Hover. I used actually their concierge domain transfer service, which was fantastic. And it's $10 for the domain, but that adds a year to your registration. So it's a really good deal if you move over to Hover. Now they've got two new domain services. They call them premium domains and clunker trade-ins. So if you search for a website like, let's say, pantsforsale.com that might perhaps, domain names that might perhaps already be occupied, they give you an interesting feature here. Domains that are owned by somebody else but are available to for sale will come up with a little gold star. Those are the premium domain names. Pants for sale with a star next to it means that somebody owns Pants for Sale but is willing to sell it to you. In fact, they have the price right there, which I think is very interesting. So you can purchase those hard-to-get domain names right from the domain name search box. Those stars indicate it. And if you have a clunker domain, domains you've registered or renewed at hover.com and you'd like to upgrade to a better name, they'll take your old domain name back. In fact, they'll credit you with everything you've spent on that clunker. And when I go to my Hover account, I have a few clunker domain names, names that I bought because I thought they'd be so great and, in fact, aren't really all that useful. They will take everything I've spent on those original registration fee, any renewal fees, and they will give it back to you. So if you want to trade in a clunker, call customer service on the website or email them at help@hover.com. You see, I think tunictime.com is never really going to go anywhere. So I mean, I could trade that in, get my money back on that one. And if you want to register your domain name right now at hover.com, just go to macbreak.hover.com and you can find out more about it. And in fact, I'm going to mention, if you go to macbreak.hover.com and use the offer code MacBreak, you'll get 10% off the site. Doesn't apply to the premium domains, but it does apply to the regular domains. So macbreak.hover.com. You see how simple it is? And by the way, domain management on this it couldn't be easier. I'm actually at the list of domain names. As I hover over it, I can unlock, make public, registry contacts, renew, auth code. All of this stuff is right here. Very simple, very powerful. It's just really, it couldn't be easier to manage your domain directly from Hover. MacBreak.hover.com. No sexy girls, not a lot of upsell, just domain name registration at a good price made simple. Hover. MacBreak.hover.com. We thank them for their support. Andy Anatko, your lion tip of the week, my friend.
This is a really cool one. And it has to do with that discoverability thing that we talked about earlier. I didn't find out about this till very, very recently. Sometimes you actually want to move files and work with files without actually using the mouse or keyboard, the Finder. With Lion, Apple has actually added copy and paste features to files in the Finder. So if you need to move a file or folder or group of files, just select them in folder A, hit Command C, move to whatever target volume, target window it is, then hit Command V. It will copy them from the origin and paste them to the destination. So it's just like dragging them from point A to point B.
I like it.
It does not work with, cut, copy, and paste, for instance. You can't like hit Command X, these files get removed from that folder and then put into the clipboard, and then you paste them someplace else. I believe that you can use like option, do option Command C. No, you can't.
No,
but you can do. But Command C and Command V absolutely work for moving files or groups of files from one place to another.
I use that all the time. It's a really nice shortcut.
Yeah. I had to actually go back to Snow Leopard to make sure that you're sure that wasn't in Snow Leopard. Nope,
Brandon. It wasn't. Okay, cool. It's been in Windows for a long time. Maybe that's where you.
Yeah,
there was
a utility that let you do that in Snow Leopard, but I don't believe that it's a Snow Leopard feature.
We don't have Alex Lindsay here to do our iOS tip, but I do have some emails, macbreak@twit.tv. Kurt wants to know what cover I have on this 11-inch MacBook Air, and this is the Incipio Feather Light, which I really like. Alex Lindsay was the guy who turned me on to this originally. And what we did, actually, John went out and bought a whole bunch of them so that when we have hosts, because sometimes we have hosts and the whole table is filled with glowing Apple logos, and I don't want it to, I don't want it to look like, you know, it's the Apple show. So we loan these to hosts so they can, and they, you know what, they protect. There's no overheating problem. I think that might be one thing people are concerned with. I've never had a problem with my MacBook Air because there's a little grid on the bottom. Yes, spec does make ones that are translucent, but these are opaque, These are from Incipio, and I think they're $30 or $40 each. They're really nice, and they have them for all models.
I think these shells are a really good thing for anybody to buy up. I have one from Incase, and it's been on my my MacBook since the day I got it. Not only is it good protection, because you're hopefully looking forward to the day 2 or 3 years from now that maybe you get a little bit something back for your old machine when you trade it in on a new one, and that'll really help the resale value. But also, how many times do you go through airport security and you nervously count, that is the third silver 15-inch MacBook Pro I've seen in this tray.
Yeah, it's nice to hide it.
I wish I put a sticker or something on it so people would take mine by accident.
Well, we all have MacBook Airs, so in fact, it is important we have different colors for our feather cases. Mark is asking, he has an older iMac. He wants to keep it and upgrade to Lion, but is considering putting in something called an MCE OptiBay drive kit to add an SSD. Basically, it takes the optical drive out, puts a mounting kit in there so you could add an SSD and then have two drives, as the new iMacs do, a solid-state drive and a spinning hard drive. I actually used the OptiBay to upgrade a laptop, and I'm kind of fumble fingers. I was able to use it and, in fact, put a spinning drive and a solid-state drive in one of my 15-inch MacBook Pros. They worked as advertised. A little overpriced for what you get. They're really not very complicated. It's just connectors and a metal kind of holder that takes the place of the optical drive. And it's a little weird because you still have a slot, but it's blocked off. So if you try to put a disc, it just goes, He says, have you opened up an iMac? Is it worth it? That, I have to say, I do not recommend. It is possible. If you go to YouTube, you can watch the videos. I recommend you watch the videos. The issue with the iMac is the glass on the front, you need suction cups to remove it. And just scares the pants off of me to do that. Having said that, we have opened up our iMacs. I just think it's probably something, unless you're very comfortable working inside of stuff like that, I would let somebody else do it.
In general, when you have a device that Apple did not mean people to have access to,
right,
you can get it open. You can perform whatever trick you think that you're being told to perform. And you probably, if you're careful, will be able to get it back together okay. But because this is the first time you've ever done it, and if assuming you even have bought exactly the right tools, the fit will probably not be spot on. So I wouldn't do that sort of thing unless I were absolutely sure that whatever I was going to do was going to be completely and totally worth it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to adding an SSD as sidecar, as a boot drive, I'm not 100% convinced that there's a real difference between swapping out a mechanical drive for an SSD and that's all your storage. That will always be a huge speed improvement. That will always, on a mobile device, let you just simply close the lid and walk away without having to wait for something to spin down. When you have a hybrid drive like that, you're still dealing with the problem of slow disk swaps for certain types of functions. Like if you're using really heavy disk access apps like Photoshop and movie editing, shouldn't be a problem if that's your boot drive and that's all that you're using that boot drive for. It shouldn't be a problem for regular kernel type disk swaps. But I'm not convinced that you'd get such a huge and revolutionary speed boost that it would be worth taking apart an iMac for it or giving up an optical drive.
The chat room's suggesting, and I agree, iFixit.com. They have parts and tools and videos for doing all of these kinds of things. So if you're going to take apart an iMac, they actually sell the suction cups, all the parts that you need to do the upgrade. So
even if you're doing something as simple as upgrading the RAM in your MacBook, which is something that Apple allows you to do, your first step is iFixit, because they will give you exhaustive, beautiful, shot-by-shot, step-by-step guides you can just download for free.
Yeah, yeah. And the tools if you want the suction cups. I let Colleen do it. In fact, she did it on the air, as I remember. That's how brave she was. It's time for our picks of the week. I don't know if we warned you, Arnold, or not, that we do these picks, but I'm going to let you think for a bit. And if you've got a pick, I would love to hear from you. But I actually think Andy's pick is kind of a little unusual. Do you want to talk about this, Andy?
It's really cool. I had a pick of the week a while ago. The Steinway company had this really cool iPhone app that was just a metronome, but it was the most beautiful metronome ever, and just made you want to just play with it and just hear it go. So apparently they are really getting into iOS apps, because they now have a new app that just got released last week called Etude. And what it is it's like an iTunes store for sheet music.
Ooh.
Now, let's see if this will actually work. I've purchased this Beethoven Piano Sonata Opus number 79, first movement. And what it will do is, I've got it in landscape mode. And what it will do is, it will actually, let's see if you can actually see it.
Yeah, it's playing.
It will play it, but it will also, like, keep you through, it'll like mark
highlighting
you,
it, yeah.
It highlight and move it through like stanza by stanza. And you don't have to have it play it for you. You can just simply use it as a piece of, as an electronic piece of music that will simply turn the pages for you as you play on your real piano. But it has so many cool features to it that part of it is that at the bottom, like if you're, I have never, the place where I hit the wall in my music education was learning how to sight read music, mm-hmm. and I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Anytime I had to learn a new piece of music, it would always be just carefully learning by rote. Here's where I put my hands here, here's where I put my hands here, and working it that way. So you can actually turn off the sound, and it will just simply, as it's highlighting the piece of music, show you what keys are being pressed at this point. You can slow it down half speed, quarter speed, whatever you want to keep up with it. Just to show you, you don't have to have it landscape mode. If you have it like this, you can also have it in portrait mode. Mm. There you go. Obviously, and you'll be able to see the full sheet of music at once. So they have classical, they have like pop, rock, jazz. As they just started off, and they already have like a pretty good collection of music. If you want to learn how to play Bohemian Rhapsody for $1.99, $2.99 for the sheet music, you can download and learn how to play Bohemian Rhapsody. It's not only a cool app, but also I think this is one of those things that you can use to explain to people the difference, why Apple is the leader in iPad, in tablet apps, why iOS has such a huge lead over everything else. Because could you even imagine, think about all the things that have to happen for an app like this to actually work. Not only just from a technical point of view, but just for it to be able to keep up with a live performance, for it to look as good as it does, and also for a company to say, we are willing to create a brand new online store for sheet music with in-app purchases, and we think that we can sell enough copies of this that it's going to be a really great business for us. I don't think it's ever going to happen with Android. Even Microsoft, good luck to them if they can actually get this working. I know that there are apps that professional orchestras use for electronic sheet music, but they're like task-oriented tablet apps. So there's nothing I don't like about this. The app itself is free. It comes with free music. The music store has a whole bunch of free music on it. Chances are that if a piece of music is in the public domain, you can download the sheet music for free. It's like the modern stuff that costs $1.99, $2.99 per. But really cool app. It's at the very minimum, you kind of want to play with it and just watch the keys go. It's like having a player piano in front of you.
It's called Steinway Etude. It's free. I think it's interesting that the number one selling song for our Steinway Etude is the Linus and Lucy theme for yes. $1.99. The number two song, Journeys, Don't Stop Believing. You figure it out. My pick of the week is just a reminder. You know, when I downloaded and wanted to install Windows 8, of course, I wanted to do it on a Macintosh in emulation. There's VirtualBox, which is free, a little tricky to get it working. VMware has updated Fusion to version 4, a $50 upgrade, which I think is actually a pretty good deal. So if you want, and Windows 8 runs well in VMware, Fusion 4, you do need the update. But look at this. Parallels has decided that they're going to go after the Fusion crowd. They've released Parallels Desktop 7, and they are now offering it. If you have, as a cross-grade for VMware Fusion, if you have VMware Fusion, you do need a VMware Fusion serial number for $30. That's normally, it's I think $99 is $100. I don't have a preference. Andy, do you have a preference between Parallels and VMware Fusion?
Not really. I actually use VirtualBox
because
it's free and it's well supported. And when I needed to get Windows 8 running, I was able to find Windows 8 will run in virtualization, but you have to configure the virtual machine so that it has the hardware that the Windows installer is expecting. And I was able to easily find instructions for that on VirtualBox. I had more trouble finding it for other VM apps.
Both of these apps will do one thing that I don't know if VirtualBox will do, which is you can have a boot camp partition, as I do on this MacBook Air, and you don't have to install Windows a second time in the virtualization. It'll just use that boot camp partition. So now you get the best of all worlds. If I want to boot into Windows, I can. If I want to run it in virtualization, I can. And to be honest, I think Parallels and VMware Fusion are pretty pretty similar in value. Although I do notice a lot of reviews that say they like Parallels. Lately, they like Parallels a little bit better. It's a little bit faster. All right. Now we've given Arnold lots of time to come up with his pick of the week. Arnold, do you have a pick for us?
I do. It's a Mac app, actually. It's a Twitter client, which I'm not sure if you all have covered before. It's a free one that's on the Mac App Store. It's called Yurufukuru.
Oh. Well, you know, I've seen this, but I've never tried it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's, well, let me spell it first so people can find it.
Yeah, good idea.
The worst part about it is the name. I can't remember how to type it, but it's Yurufukuru. And it's on the Mac App Store. It's free. And it's just, you know, you think it's just another Twitter client, but I don't know. For a while, I was jumping from Twitter client to Twitter client because I just couldn't. I felt like I could never really stay up to date on Twitter, and maybe that's not always a good thing. But after I downloaded this one, I was sold. I mean, it sort of has some of the features of the bigger ones, the TweetDecks and whatnot. I never liked TweetDeck because I guess probably partially because it was an error application and it just never felt right. The notifications never worked quite right. It didn't sort of integrate well with Growl and those sort of things. So, what's nice, really nice about Yurufukuru is just you can do multiple accounts, of course. You can have multiple tabs, and there's a lot of good keyboard shortcuts so that once you get used to it, you really feel like you are in. I don't know, I feel like I have control of my Twitter client and I can like jump from like place to place, easily reply and like follow up and those sort of things. Whereas with other ones, I've always kind of felt lost in them, if that makes sense.
Yes. So you prefer this to the free Twitter. Yeah, this is kind of neat. I actually just downloaded it and installed it as you were talking.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, I prefer it to all. I mean, I kind of jumped at one point because you know, Twitter is important for all of us, of course. You know, and you know, I have a lot of followers, so it's kind of nice to follow up with people and sort of see what they're saying. And I did feel like I tried every Twitter client out there, and then it wasn't until like most recently, and it's actually a plug for the Mac App Store because I went to the Mac App Store. I was like, all right, well, let me see. So I just typed in Twitter, and then like all these. You know, Twitter client showed up, but Yurufukuru was actually the highest rated one. So I was like, "Oh, let me try this one," and it's great.
Very sweet. Well, there you go. And yeah, good luck remembering the name Yurufukuru.
Yeah,
that's just good marketing.
It's actually Night Owl in Japanese. There you go.
Yeah, that's why. It's from a Japanese developer.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. All right, well, I've installed it. I'll be playing with it. Thank you for a great tip.
All right.
Arnold Kim is at MacRumors.com, where he is the editorial director, because it's his site. He founded it. He's also on Twitter, at Arnold Kim, and I'm so glad we could get you back on. We've got to get you back on more often. MacRumors is
thanks.
A must-read for me in prepping for this show and every day. It's just the source for Macintosh news. So thank you for doing a great job.
All right, thank you.
Take care, Arnold. And thanks to you, Andy Yannacco, Chicago Sun-Times, and, of course, his website, www.cwob.com. When's your speech today?
Tomorrow at noon.
Well, good luck with the speech.
So people are going to have lunch an hour later because they're going to be listening to me. I don't think I can live up to that kind of expectation.
Wow, that's tough. That's a lot to ask. Well,
And New York is a foodie town.
It is, as you know, as it ought to be. Is the speech open to the public, Dr. Mom's asking?
I don't believe so.
Because she's a doctor, you know.
Sloan Kettering Community. Well, I'll check and put something on Twitter. I don't believe it's open to the public, but I'll check.
Follow Andy on Twitter at IHNATKO, which is about as furukuru as you can get. Thank you, Andy. And thank you all for being here. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at twit.tv. We hope you will watch live. If you don't get to, well, don't forget, you can always download it. In fact, I download it anyway in case you missed something. It's on twit.tv. We've got links to all the download places. Of course, it's on the iTunes Store. Everywhere better podcasts are available. Just search for Mac Break Weekly. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work. Break time's over.